Welcome to Solutions OP Clinical Trials Podcast. My name is Olga and I'm the Managing Director of Solutions OP. We are a small team of experienced professionals working on clinical trials in the United Kingdom. I'll use our podcast to discuss hot topics in clinical trials and provide analysis of the latest trends and challenges in pharma and medical device industries, not just in the UK, but globally. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. In today's episode, I will be discussing how the regulatory agencies could help small pharma and biotech companies in their quest of developing new products and placing them on the market. But before we discuss this, I think I would like to mention the unique challenges that the startups and small pharma and biotech companies face when it comes to drug development or new medical devices development. So the first and big one is funding, obviously. I think many people guess that. In the recent years, what we've seen is that there is a lot less funding in early stage development, and it's more towards late stage development. So for those of you who are not quite up to date, so late stage development would be considered drugs and medical devices which are about to be placed on the market. So they have quite a lot of data already, and there's kind of security, if you want to say that way, that they will reach the market. So investors are looking for more secure investment rather than risking their money into something that they don't know what's going to happen at the end. So maybe some of you say, well, that's a good thing because there'll be new drugs for the patients and new medical devices for the patients if they invest in late stage. But the reality is, if you want to have late stage companies and products, you need to start from the early stage. So someone has to create and design and invent these new products and these new drugs, and then they will potentially reach the late stage. So we still need the early stage development, and it's really critical for all innovations that we have on the market. So that's the first part. So the second big issue that small companies face are resources. So finding the experienced staff, it's a big challenge, particularly the ones that have experience working with small companies. We have quite a lot of people who have worked for many years in big corporations, but when you're working in a small company, it's completely different culture and it requires a different mindset. So that's another very big issue. And the third, and probably one of the major concerns for the companies, are regulatory expectations. So while many regulators have some support for small and pharma and biotech companies and have some fee reductions and waivers, in the long run, the companies need to invest a lot of cash to be able to run clinical trials which are requested by the regulatory agencies and have the data which is required so that they can actually place their product on the market. So, for example, FDA expects companies to have two clinical trials before applying for marketing authorization. And mind you, that doesn't mean two random clinical trials. That means clinical trials that will produce the expected results that they want to see. So that's the little catch in the whole thing. But again, let's go back to, do we really need startups and small pharma and biotech companies? Do we really need to try and make it easier for them and help them? Well, the short answer to this is yes, we do. And the reason for that is we have these all big companies, pharma and biotech companies. Now, first of all, they didn't turn up big all of a sudden. All these companies, once upon a time, they were small companies and they were working in the garage or whatever. And then they all grew and become big companies, like many tech corporations. So in order to have these big companies and to develop new products, you definitely need to have startups, and you need someone who very interested in the science. It's very interested in providing new products and developing and designing them. Another big challenge with the big corporations is once they become very big, they are very good at making money. They're very good. They have the expertise that they need. They're good with designing their studies and so on. But they're not so good into with innovations. So what we see is a lot of these big companies and corporations, they tend to buy startups and smaller companies which have very interesting, exciting products that have a lot of potential and they could, you know, benefit patients. So that's why even big companies have interest of having these startups and having people coming up with new ideas. At the same time, there is another very big issue when it comes to drugs and medical devices. There are widespread shortages. So many drugs with expired patent face a lot of competition from biosimilars. There are many biotech companies that withdrew their devices from the market just because there's a lot of competition or it's no longer cost-effective to manufacture them. So we have this situation where we need new drugs. There are lots of rare diseases that need treatment. And we have at the same time shortages of drugs and medical devices. So I think this is really why we need to have new ideas, startups and small companies developing new drugs and new medical devices, which will benefit the patients at the end. So let's go to the question, what can regulators do to help small pharma and biotech companies? I think the first critical part is to improve the access to scientific advice. Usually it takes a lot of time to obtain scientific advice and agree with the regulator. However, later on, once the company has the study and they start, there are additional challenges that they might want to discuss with the regulator, but it's not so straightforward to go back to these same people who gave you the advice and say, well, look, we discussed this and this with you, but now we are facing these challenges. So tell us, what do you think is the best thing to do? Because things like that happen, especially for those companies. And there are a lot of small companies that work in rare diseases. So you discuss it with the regulator. They give you an advice, and then you design your study and you start. And then 2 years later, you haven't recruited like more than 10 patients. So, and you have a target, let's say, of 150. So obviously, in order for you to recruit all these patients that they want, you need years. And while big corporations can afford to do this, they have the funding to do it. For small companies, that's equal to death sentence, because they won't be able to raise any more money if they're stuck there and they're not able to get the data that they need. So it is very critical to me that companies can go back to people who gave them the scientific advice, sit down and discuss, say, okay, you advised this, we did it, this is where we are, what do you think is the best way, what we can do? Because the problem here is, once you have a study which you've set up and it's ongoing, it's really difficult to make any major changes and adjustments to the design. If you're making any drastic changes, that will be equivalent of a new study. So it's a very critical point for many companies, and I think it's really important that they have this communication with these people who gave them scientific advice. So if regulators can facilitate that, That will be amazing. It will be really helpful for these companies to be able to go back and say, okay, we tried and this is what we have and what can we do to continue and produce the results that you need. Another big thing that could be done is to allow the Me Too drugs and products using known classes of substances to reach the market quicker. So when we say Me Too drugs, these are drugs that are structurally similar to existing drug and they're used in the same therapeutic purposes. So we have a lot of drugs on the market which have been available for years and they're from the same class. And there are companies that develop new drugs from this same class. They're still used in the same, pretty much same disease area, for example, in oncology. But these drugs, they have improved safety profile. They even have improved efficacy. And very often they are targeting rare diseases. So for example, you have a drug from this class, which is approved for lung cancer, for example. And the company has developed a drug which is for a specific rare type of lung cancer. So it's still in the same disease area and it's still the same class, but it was tweaked a little bit, so it might work for these people with that rare disease. However, that kind of drugs, similar to everything else, are considered as completely new and they need to provide a lot of data to be able to reach the market. What I think is more appropriate is once you have some data and you have confirmation that it's safe and you have some efficacy data, is to allow these companies to have some kind of provisional marketing authorization. And that provisional marketing authorization will have a condition attached that if they can have this drug, they can have that marketing authorization, but they need to provide additional data for within whatever period of time, otherwise their authorization will lapse. And I think this is really good way to help small companies who are working on a Me Too drugs and who are trying to target rare diseases. In terms of coverage, you know, the drug could be reimbursed partially because it doesn't have the full marketing authorization until they produce the additional data. But this will help a lot to the small companies because if they have that kind of provisional authorization, they can go to the investors and say, well, look, we have this data and we have this provisional authorization, but we need funding to be able to prove that our drug really works and provide additional data to support our application. And I think this will really work and will help a lot of companies and also will allow to have a lot more treatments for rare diseases, because at the moment, people with rare diseases are sitting there waiting for treatment, and their treatments for their conditions, which are lingering for years and years and years, because they're trying to get the funding to be able to run the next study, or they have the data, but it's not quite everything that they need for the application, and all that is delaying basically a treatment reaching to the patients. So I think we need to really be reasonable and do a proper risk assessment of these studies. And I'll give a real life examples. So for example, you have a new dialysis solution for a rare condition for patients who need dialysis and have special rare condition. So this new solution uses components which are already used in commercial solutions. So rather than asking company like that to provide a lot of data, I think there could be a risk assessment and allow them to provide some amount of data and then collect the next data in an additional study later on after they have some kind of provisional approval. Because we should not forget that we have shortages of dialysis solutions. So it really doesn't make sense that you have the shortages of dialysis solutions, and at the same time you have dialysis solutions in development which cannot make it to the market because the companies are struggling to get funding so that they can do all the work that is required from them, and also because it's rare condition, it takes a lot longer for them to recruit. Another example is it's something that happened, and I worked on this product in the past. It was a chemotherapy drug which was extremely promising. All oncologists were very keen on it. Unfortunately, the company didn't have the correct data to begin with. They applied to FDA for marketing authorization, which was rejected, the application. And they requested additional data, and then they couldn't raise any more funds, and they filed for bankruptcy. So all that drug is now shelved somewhere. And it was really a shame. It was really a big shame because it was very promising and very good drug, and people were very keen on it. Another good example that I can give is with oncology Me Too drugs, where they've been approved in Asia, they're for rare diseases, and yet in all the Western Europe, the companies are required to provide more and more data to justify submitting for marketing authorization. By the time they're trying to get to the US, for example, they already have this drug sold on the market in Asia for 10 years, which is crazy. So I think there is a lot that regulatory agencies can do to help companies get new products to the market and to the patients at the same time. But how could this be done? You'll say, well, yeah, but there's still risks, you know, it's complicated. And I agree, yes, of course, there are risks with new drugs, and you need to be sure that they're really safe, and you need to have data on efficacy. You can't just approve them like that. I'm not suggesting this in any way. But the regulators can create their own risk assessments, and they can assess different drugs and decide what kind of minimal data they need to be able to let them continue and have some kind of approval so that they can continue with their development, and the product will reach the patients and the company will be able to raise funds so that they can continue and provide additional data. So I think the risk assessment is a very, very critical thing. But of course, there will be always unknowns, especially when we have the patients that we're dealing with. But we need to really consider the rare diseases and the amount of people who are just sitting there need treatment, and there's absolutely nothing for them. And at the same time, we have to consider the shortages that we have with drugs and medical devices. I think providing some kind of provisional marketing authorization would really be a good idea if it's designed very well, and this in combination with the risk assessment would allow to have more products reach the market quicker. But at the same time, you can still put this condition that they will not have the full approval and full marketing authorization before they provide the additional data to support the application. It could happen that they could provide the data which is, you know, not acceptable. In this case, their authorization could be revoked, the same way as with many other therapies where they've been approved and later on it was discovered that they don't really work, and then the marketing authorization is revoked. So it will work in the same manner, and it will have the same philosophy behind it, but it will help a lot for small companies who are trying to develop products, particularly for rare diseases and conditions where there's not much opportunities. So what I can say at the end is, let's not discourage small and pharma and biotech companies from reaching the marketing authorization stage. We should not forget that, you know, all our big companies leading in innovations and everything. These companies have been small companies a long time ago, and they started from somewhere, and someone gave them a chance and helped them to reach the market. So I think we really need to try and help all those promising small companies who are trying to make it to the market and make a difference for the patients. And another thing, which is my personal experience, is many of these small pharma and biotech companies, they really believe in what they do. And many of them are really devoted to make a difference to the patients. So I think they deserve help and they deserve an opportunity to make it to the market. So let's think how to make it possible, and how to benefit both at the same time, to get new products to the market and to benefit patients who are waiting for years and years for treatment. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that was an interesting topic.